We hope and trust that you will find this Torah in Motion program meaningful. Through these programs, Torah in Motion encourages discussion, debate, and education about the most important issues facing Jews and Judaism today. Together, we can focus on creating religious commitment through an honest and sophisticated encounter with topics that are relevant to being Jewish in the modern world. For more information about this and other Torah in Motion programs, please visit the website at www.torahinmotion.org.
Shabbat guest asked me yesterday if I had prepared my talk. So I said I had chosen a theme, and I had chosen some mikorot, some sources. But I frankly wasn't sure what one ought to hope to achieve in a talk on Tisha B'Av afternoon. In particular, whether it should be a primarily cognitive experience, a primarily experiential event. And I don't know that I have any answers to that question, but I've tried to knit together these sources in a way that will not simply be an intellectual exercise. Rabbi Breidowitz, quoting the Maharal, reminded us that sometimes intellectual analysis, of which I'm generally a fan, can get in the way of messages that come in on other wavelengths. So I'm going to, in some measure, try to let the sources speak for themselves, and I hope that it will transcend the merely intellectual and move on into the existential, I guess one might say. If one were to reduce this theme to one line, I guess one might summon the statement we make in Avinu Malkeinu. Avinu Malkeinu, say, L'ma'an tzvuchim al yichudecha. We know that one of the primary experiences of Galut has been slaughter of Jews. We know this from the keynote that we read this morning, the time of the Churban Abayit, this was the case, the time of the First Crusade in 1096, where the leading communities of Ashkenaz and Mainz and Speyer and Worms were annihilated. And so I thought to approach that theme by looking at one verse or a set of verses, but in particular one verse that recurs and becomes the leitmotif for this particular theme. There's actually another line in Avinu Malkeinu which is worth mentioning. L'ma'an bai v'esh uvamayim al-kidu shemecha. We call on God to act on behalf of those who went through fire and water in order to sanctify the divine name. And I heard once, I think it was on Yom HaShoah, Rav Lau Shlita, say that there are people nowadays who deny that 6 million Jews were denied, were annihilated during the destruction of European Jewry in the mid-20th century. And he said he agrees with them. It's true that 6 million is not the correct figure, that there were many more than 6 million. Because he asked, what's the difference between Aish and Mayim? He said, we know that in Germany and Eastern Europe, many died through Aish. I think I'm told that you can still go to Majdanek, one of the concentration camps, and still see the ashes of people who were burned, preserved under plastic. So when you die by Aish, said Rav Lau, there's a complete destruction of the body. But he said there's another type of mita. There's a mita which is v'mayim. What happens when somebody drowns? The body, as it were, remains intact. The external appearance is not radically altered. The only thing that's missing is ruach chaim. This is not alive. But the body is there, unchanged. Said Rav Lau, there were many more who died v'mayim in the Holocaust. They came out of the Holocaust. They didn't die v'esh. And they continued to walk around, but there was no ruach chaim in them. So in fact, there was many more than 6 million. So we'll see that slaughter can take many forms. The Gemara that we'll see even expands this idea in ways we wouldn't expect. But the starting point is some psukim in Tehillim, Tehillim Men Dawud, I read these yesterday to my wife, and she was amazed that this is in Tehillim. She said, what is this doing in Tehillim? I won't take time to read the whole Mizmor, but you see that already early in the Mizmor, and where we have it on the sheet, we have described the many trials and tribulations that Jewish people have suffered. Lag v'keles, svivotenu, Jewish people, a scorn and derision to those who are around us. Simenu mashal b'goyim, min dod rosh, balumim, very graphic image to my mind. People shake their heads at the fate of the Jewish people, that one people should experience such suffering. A whole catalog of, as it were, complaints, klapi mala. And then, continues the Mizmor, despite all this, kol zot ba'atnu, all these things have come upon us, v'lo shakachanucha, despite that we have not forgotten you, v'lo shikarnu bibritecha, you have not been false to your covenant, lo nasoga chor libeinu, our heart is not turned back, v'teit ashurenu mini orchecha, neither have our steps declined from your path, etc., etc., till the culmination. First of all, we're told, had this not been true, had we failed in our obligations, who better than God would know? So we can't pretend here. If we say that we haven't failed, it's true. Right? Im shachachnu shem alokeinu v'nifros kapeinu le'el zar, had we done these things, spread forth our hands to a strange God, halo elokim yachakor zot. Ki hu yodea talumot lev, God knows. Ki alecha horagnu chol hayom, but rather it's the opposite. For thy sake are we killed all the day, nechshavnu ketzon tivcha, we are counted as sheep for the slaughter. And the psukim really speak for themselves, but if one looks quickly at the mefarshim, one finds some ideas which sharpen some of the ideas expressed in the psukim. Ibn Ezra, for example, stresses the element of will. Not only did we die, but we died willingly. Ki beritzoneinu anu nehargim al devar kavod shemecha, on behalf of the divine name. Uberitzoneinu nechshavnu ketzon tivcha. We willingly accepted these things. Radak stresses the element of duress, that even in times of duress, the Jewish people managed to live up to their obligations. One issue that the Mefarshim discuss is kol hayom. What's kol hayom? So Radak says tamid, it means constantly. It's been a regular experience. Rav Sadia Gaon says kol hazman hazet, refers specifically, tie it into a Tisha B'Av theme, to Zman Hazeh, namely Zman HaGalut. That in particular, this has been, of course, the experience of the Jewish people in Galut. So these psukim, and in particular, this closing verse, becomes a way to summon this experience that the Jewish people have regularly had in exile. One can see examples in Sifrut Chazal, just one line here from a Midrash Shir Shirim that you have, where today Israel are compared to a Yonah, a Naif Yonim, Ma Yonazo Poshetet Tzavara, just as what is the comparison here? Just as a dove stretches forth its neck, Lishchita, in order to be slaughtered, Kach Yisrael, ki alecha horagnu chol hayom. One might ask, what is this doing in Midrash Shir HaShirim? After all, Shir HaShirim is a series of love poems. Chazal tell us it reflects the love between Bnei Yisrael and Hashem. But of course, much of that relationship has been characterized by slaughter. And Chazal do not shy away from that fact. In fact, it's particularly in Midrash Shir HaShirim that one finds this particular pasuk invoked, specifically in the context of referring to instances of Kiddush Hashem, of Jewish people giving up their lives on behalf of their faith. So to the Rambam in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, when he's talking about the laws that govern martyrdom, Kiddush Hashem more specifically and accurately, says a few other things, and then he goes on to say that somebody who is obligated to give up one's life in whatever situation it may be, No need to go into the details. So such a person has sanctified the divine name, Kidesh et Hashem. If that happens in public, the imhayaba asarami Israel, meaning 10 Jews, hareze kidesh et Hashem barabim, kedaniel, Hananya, Mishael, Azaria, Rabbi Akiva, v'chavei rav. Example from Tanakh, book of Daniel, and then from the time of the second temple, Rabbi Akiva and his companions, the Eilen Haruge Mochut She'ein Ma'ala Mima'ala Tan. One might ask here why it is that the Rambam tells us this. After all, the Rambam's code is a legal code. It's a sefer halacha. This is not legal material. But apparently the Rambam felt compelled to add this. It's possible that this has some halachic valence, but in principle it's not halachic material. I think it's not impossible. The Rambam felt compelled to add this simply by the compelling nature of Jewish historical experience, which he writes about in other places more openly, Egeret Teiman, Letter to the Jews of Yemen, etc. One thing worth noting, I just noticed this yesterday, is that Sheets of the Slaughter, which is a description we know from the period of the Holocaust, is not, the Radak stresses this point, which is obvious once you think about it, is not in principle a descriptive term. It's a term which describes how Jews are viewed on the part of non-Jews in these circumstances. That's how Jews were looked at. Like sheep to the slaughter, no more. And probably in the time of the Nazis, much less. That's part of the humiliation of Galut. So, both in Chazal and in the Rishonim, one finds this pasuk mentioned. To bring this more into the frame of reference of Tisha B'Av, we can quite quote several sources. One is this kina that said this morning, Hacharisha Mimeni, Ba'adabera, Ba'ya'avor Alayma. And marked where the actual reference occurs in the kina, but if one reads a little before that, one has this very powerful description of the massive sacrifice. The massive Kiddush Hashem involved in this medieval event of unknown origin. Eich shavat masos ba'arva simcha. How could it be that joy is so completely marginalized in Jewish life? Kol panim parur, difficult biblical references, all faces are blackened. V'chol rosh karcha, v'chol zaken gedua, all beards are cut off. V'al kol lev anacha, sorrow and agony grips all souls. And then eventually, the description of Betulotai, Uvachurai, Nasach, Benisicha, Barosh, Kol Chutzot, Nivlatan, Kasucha, very harsh expression that the carcasses are left as waste products, as dung. Olalai v'tapai nechshavnu ketzon tivcha. It's not just the adults, but the youngest of the young who suffer this fate. And my teacher, Rabbi Tversky Zitzal, commented on this particular kina, that the one thing that's very striking about it is that there's no self-indictment here, which is a theme that one finds in many of the other kinos. Ipnei chata'enu, galinu me'artzenu. You do not have that here. This is an outpouring simply to give full description to the Kiddush Hashem. Hacharish memene by the Beber, I will speak. V'yavar gaiman, no matter what. Without any attempt to indict or explain. And we'll come back to that theme. Another place where this verse crops up is the Gemara in Kiddushin, in Gittin rather, which is among the Gemaras that are studied especially on Tisha B'Av. This is also a story which crops up in one of the keynote. Amar Rav Yehuda, set of possibilities as to the source of this story. Maaseh b'dawad me'ot yiladim v'yiladot, an event which occurred, 400 boys and girls, young men, young women, shenishbu akalon, they were taken captive for evil purposes. Here gishu ba'atzman l'mahem nivakshim, they sensed that their fate was going to be an unhappy one. perhaps presumably having something to do with sexual impropriety, and they raised the question, maybe we should take our own lives. Some of us know this is a major development in the 1096 Crusades. People took their own lives, slaughtered their families, including their children. Discussion about how such a thing could be possible halakhically, but just the mere fact should be remembered and should send shivers up our spine. So the question was asked, is that something we can do when a verse is quoted? Amar Hashem, Ibashan, Ashiv, Ashiv, Mutzvot Yam. And the answer came that this was appropriate in this case. And so they did. And this is a realization, says the Gemara, of this verse in Tehillim, Ki Alecha Haragnu Chol Hayom Nechshavnu Ketzom Tivcha. What's interesting is that after continuing in a similar vein, the Gemara tells another story, another famous story, Rav Yehuda Amar Zo Isha Vashiva Baneha. What are other instances where this verse has been realized? You see, at the bottom, the Gemara takes a very different tack and says there are other ways that we are slain for God's sake all day. What's another way? Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Amar Zo Mila Shenitna B'Shmini. The Jewish people, through their allegiance to the mitzvah of Brit Milah, also, as it were, allow themselves to be slain every day on behalf of God in order to preserve the Brit. And so, too, the Gemara goes on to talk about scholars who, when they teach the laws of Shechita, rather than simply doing it on the blackboard, do some audio visuals and allow for practice on themselves to impart the laws in their totality. This is also, says the Gemara, a realization of Alecha Haragnu Kol Hayom. And one last source mentioned, again relevant to the Tisha B'Av theme, is from a poem of Ramban. You know that Ramban was born in Spain, and in 1263 he engaged in a famous debate with a Jewish apostate, Pablo Cristiani. And however the debate went, it seems it went relatively well for Ramban. The upshot of the historical events was that he had to leave Spain, and he ended out his life in Eretz Israel. And upon coming to Yerushalayim, at a time when Yerushalayim was in a particularly lowly state, it was after the period of the Mongol invasions, 13th century, upon coming to Yerushalayim, he wrote a Shir, really more like a kinat, Bilah al Chorvot Yerushalayim. And here too he asks the sorts of questions that we think about on Tisha B'Av, Ad Matai Atalot Terachem at Yerushalayim. When will it happen that finally God will show mercy on Yerushalayim? Velo Tidrosh Damim, when will the blood of those who have died be requited? Dam Nafshot Evyonim Agumim Tzadikim Et Mimim, the righteous, the poor, the pure people, Asher the Shimcha, Ha'eru L'mavet Nefesham, who have given over, poured out their soul on behalf of your name, V'tachat Acherev Natnu Rosham, place their heads beneath the sword, V'alecha Horgu Kol Hayom, on your behalf, for your sake, they were killed all day long. That is not the only experience that Jews in times of trouble underwent. And first remembering that, I think, and we'll see in a moment, how the fact that sometimes Jews did not die on behalf of God is also reflected in our sources, willy-nilly. And that's also part of the onesh of Galut, even when there was failure, if that's what it is, and it's hard to judge people for failing to die, unless you're in the same position, and even if you are, perhaps. But even when there's failure, nonetheless, the mere fact that Jews are put in circumstances where they have to make such horrible choices, we know the horrible choices that were imposed upon Jews. Again, the most recent examples with which are familiar, World War II, where people were given one exit visa and had to choose between a wife and a mother. So here, if you look at source number 6, this is a passage from the Akedat Yitzhak, Yitzhak Arama. And we'll have to see what he does with these psukim and try to understand why he does what he does. He's talking here about emunah, and he wants to make the point that when all else fails, emunah is what counts. Somewhat difficult language, but he says that it's possible, efshar, shelo yushlemu, a person, lo, shar inyanim, yechyeba, someone who is imperfect in all other aspects of his Jewish observance, can nonetheless survive on the basis of faith. Masha iyafshar chayot im yechsar ve'emuna v'yushnam behem, which is not true in the reverse case, says the Akedat Yitzchak. If you have everything else but lack emuna, so you can't survive. How many people have sinned with regard to specifics? But nonetheless, they managed to continue to exist as Jews as a result of their faith. And we find, says the Baal HaKadosh Yitzchak, that this is attested to in the Psukim and Tehillim with which we're now familiar. Al Bnei Agalut, where we're told with respect to the people who lived in exile, Kol Zod Ba'atnu Velo Shachachanucha, etc. Lo Nasog Achor Libenu V'Teit Ashurenu Mini Orchecha. That's the verses that we have already seen, right? Just to remind ourselves. All of these things have come upon us, and nonetheless we did not forget you. Neither have we been false to your covenant. Our heart is not turned back, neither are our steps declined from thy path. Those are the psukim we started with. What do these mean? Says Rabbi Yitzchak Arama. Yirtzeh, it means this. Afo pi shenatata ashurenu mini orchecha lefamim hine lo nasog achor libenu be'emunatenu. Anyone catch the change from the traditional understanding? Even though we have, what's the difference between this and what we've seen so far? He says, he quotes the verses that we started with, which up until now we've understood to mean that we have been perfect. We have never failed, right? We kept up our end of the bargain. With the implication of the psukim being, we're not so sure about the other end of the bargain. Says Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, Yirtzeh, Afo Pishin Natata Ashurenu Mini Orchecha Lefamim, even though our step has slipped occasionally, Hine Lo Nasog Achor Libenu Bemunatenu. Nonetheless, our heart has been faithful. But who Atzmo Mashi Yirtzeh, just to continue, that's what he means, David Amel, says Rabbi Yitzchak Arama, when he says, Im Shechachnu Shem Alokeinu, Afo Pishin Lefamim, Peirashnu Kapenu Le'elzar. Right? The rest of the verses went on to say, if we had forgotten God, if we had spread out our hands to a false deity, surely God could investigate this, because God knows Talmud Lev. He knows the inner recesses of the heart. It's tricky. What is he saying here? He's not saying we never slip. He's saying, Afo Bishan Natata Ashurenu, even though our steps have slipped, Lifamim, sometimes. Nonetheless, it remains the case that we retained our faith. Right? And that's the point he's trying to make. Faith is ultimately what counts. And, he goes on to say, that God will know. What will God know? That even if we spread our hands to a false deity, nonetheless, what? Nonetheless, our faith, our inner faith, remains intact. Right? That's not what we learned from Radak and even Ezra. So the question is, why is it that here we have this very odd interpretation? Yes, it's true we slip, but nonetheless we were faithful. Yes, it's true we spread our hands to a false deity. But nonetheless, God, who can investigate the inner recesses of the heart, God will know that we didn't really mean it. So the answer, I think, has to be that Rabbi Yitzchak Aramau lived in Spain on the eve of the Spanish expulsion. This is a period when large numbers of Jews had either forcibly converted to Christianity or perhaps in some measure converted out of doubt. But at least in initial stages, large numbers of Jews were forcibly converted to Christianity. They were going to church every Sunday. And that being the case, he can't say we have not spread our hands out to a false god. He knows they have, under duress perhaps, but that they have done. But what? But, he says, there's a redeeming feature which only God can know, because only God sees the inner recesses of the heart. Nonetheless, they retain their faith. So here we see an instance where the psukim don't unfold as they sound originally. Where a rabbi speaking to a congregation can't say we have been thoroughgoing in our allegiance. But what he can say is, nonetheless, despite the failures, the basic fundamental connection remains. We'll come back to the psukim in a moment, but want to detour for a moment. Rabbi Twersky, my teacher, noted an interesting thing. The Rambam in Hilchot Taniyot said that the things that you can learn on Tisha B'Av are Sefer Iyov and Kinot and those parts of Sefer Yirmiyahu that speak about bad things, about the Korban-related matters. If you puzzle over that list for a moment, it's very odd. Why should Sefer Iyov, why should the book of Job be among the things that one learns on Tisha B'Av? Why should it be listed first? So Rabbi Twersky said that on Tisha B'Av, evil itself is up for discussion. That was the answer that he gave. That is a theme of this day. I want to think about that a little further. It seems to me one implication of the fact that you can learn Sefer Iyov on Tisha B'Av is, and that evil is up for discussion per se, is that one's purview on Tisha B'Av should not be exclusively limited to the national tragedy of the Jewish people. I can't remember when it was, I think a week or so ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, and I can't remember quite what it was, but I think it was reading some statistics about recent events in China. I've heard a lot about this recently. How many people have been killed there for political crimes? And then I read a statistic about somebody who was tortured for a terrible crime, namely they had one more pregnancy than they were allowed to have, and the terrible tortures they underwent. And one couldn't help but think, how far are we from our vision of the world if such things can still go on this planet? That, it seems to me, is something that's also worthy of discussion and thought on Tisha B'Av. But there's another aspect of Iyov that I would at least like to suggest may be significant here. You have a passage from, a relatively famous passage from the book of Iyov, which talks about chokhmah, which talks about wisdom. V'hachokhmah mi'ayin tavo. Where does wisdom come from? A question that all human beings, if they're thoughtful human beings, have asked throughout the ages. And one has an account of how difficult it is to come upon chokhmah. Eizem makom bina. V'ne'elma me'enei cholchai. It's not something that's easy to come upon. But of course, says Sefer Iyov, Elohim hevin darka, v'hu yada ed mikoma. God does know where wisdom is, as it were. Very good. So what is the relationship between God's knowledge of wisdom and the way we lead our lives? So at the end of these psukim, we're told that God sees wisdom, declares wisdom. Az ra'a v'yisapara, hechina v'gam chakara, v'yomer la'adam hein yirat Adonai hi chokhma v'surmei rabina. The question is, how do you translate that first vav? In verse 28, Vayomer. So we have here, and unto man he said, which sounds like God has wisdom, and eventually he bestows his gift upon human beings as well. He shares his knowledge. But this vav can also be translated as but. That's how the Malbim suggests it should be translated. It goes off on a different path, but that's what he says, aval. God possesses wisdom, aval, but he doesn't reveal wisdom to human beings. What he does is to give us some sense of how we can make our way in a world where we really don't possess an understanding of the whole. And I think, at least my own personal experience of Tisha B'Av, maybe not representative and maybe not normative, is that the more one explores some of these experiences, it really does defy understanding the sacrifices that some have been asked to make. Now, this may be a heretical idea, but at least I want to find one earlier heretic who has articulated it. This last source you have is a very little-known commentary from a 15th century Parshan. And he's talking about Psukim that we read this morning in the Kriya, which is really a remarkable Kriya, next week's Parshan, that Moshe Rabbeinu, on the eve of the entry of Bnei Yisrael into the Promised Land, tells them, you know what, your stay is not going to last very long. I foresee failure and I foresee your eviction. Not a very inspiring way, I suppose, to enter the land. Worse than that, Moshe says, they will descend from the heights of entering the Holy Land as the Am Hashem into idolatry. V'avadatam sham Elohim ma'aseh yadei adam eitz ve'evan asher lo yir'un v'lo yishma'un v'lo yochlun v'lo yirichun. They will worship wood and stone. But there is a hopeful note in all this. Uvikashtem misham et Hashem Elokecha matzata ki tidrashenu b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha. If you see God earnestly, even from those depths of idolatry, even having traveled so far from one's connection with the divine, nonetheless, that connection can be reestablished if your seeking is b'chol levavcha b'chol nafshecha. Comes along Aaron Abu Rabi, and we don't know very much about this gentleman, what it is that agitated him so. We know that he traveled a lot, he didn't seem to find Manoach, he actually did make his way to Yerushalayim. But if one reads his Perush elsewhere also, one gets the sense of an agitated personality, somebody who's not at peace. And he says on these psukim, and I find this very moving, Oy la'ozen sheshomat, woe to the ear that hears these verses. Hine derashnuhu ve'ein bi'adeinu avodah zarah. We have sought God. And we're not even talking about seeking God from a position of worshipping idols. What do we have in our hands? Eilat tsar u'machovim kol yameinu kedei l'chazik emunateinu, just simply to hold on to our faith, the challenges Jews face, which I think are essentially unimaginable to us in our circumstances, simply to retain their faith, adhere to their faith. Hu kecheresh lo yishma u'chileim lo yiftach piv. Speaking about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and this is what I mentioned earlier, the comment of Rabbi Twersky on this piyut, hacharishu mimeni, this sense of simply pouring it out without feeling necessarily like one has to indict oneself. Says Arab Rabbi, you might say to me, well, after all, the psukim and sefer devarim say it's only when you seek wholeheartedly. So maybe there's some problem with the quality of your search. He says, ki bui safek, that cannot be. Ki bui safek ha'il va'anu sovlim kol kach tzarot rabot v'ra'ot. We suffer so enormous evils. B'libeinu v'nafshenu anachnu dorshim. It's obvious that we're seeking in an all-hearted way, given the experience that we go through simply to continue to exist as Jews. Up to and including v'lo sarnu milagdil la'adir torato kadosha. We have not even gone beyond to exalt the Holy Torah. Ad horagnu kol hayom. Even up to losing our lives in this quest. Uvarov mirut nefesh ukeev lev v'nezel d'ma'ot ketavtim. I wrote this with tears, with bitterness of spirit, he says. Now there is a happy note here as well, because the psukim go on to say, lo yarpecha, lo yazveka. God will not leave the Jewish people. Lo yashchit ba'ofen shelo tuchal l'shuv alav. He says, on the other hand, don't think that the connection is so asunder at points that there's no hope of reconnecting. L'chein lo titye'esh mila'asot tshuva afilu mi'ayot herchet gadol. Sorry, there's a typo there. She'yein l'hach'is. You should not lose heart. You should continue to understand that there's a possibility of doing tshuva, of reconnecting with God. But here I would say the tone is not so much, at least in the first part, on tshuva, so much as just an awareness that sometimes there's an inscrutability to the trial. I mean, we hear the news from Israel every day, the horrors that are occurring, just inscrutable horrors that no one should have to endure. So I think I would leave with maybe a dual message. One is that there is hope, as Aaron Abu Rabi tells us, and we teach above on a high note. And the other is, as the Gemara observes, that there are other ways to be Mekayim, this type of, this mode of relationship with God, Ki Alecha Haragnu Kol Yom, other than the horrible eventuality of slaughter. Mila, different types of learning, the Gemara goes on to say, you have it there, that simply to study Torah with the dedication that's required is a form of death, as it were. And so, I think one has to maybe perhaps try to keep these two in balance. On one hand, an awareness that there have been tremendous sacrifices, that sometimes they're hard to understand or maybe impossible to understand. On the other hand, that that can't lead to yush, as Aaron Abu Rabi says, that one can lead Tisha B'Av knowing that the connection is there for the taking and that there are ways that we can achieve that connection, which are counted to us as if we too were, as it were, slaughtered for God's sake.
Okay, thank you. Now we're ahead of a schedule, a few minutes. So we'll take a 15-minute break. We'll start our next year 10 minutes early. If nobody minds. Those who aren't here, new, what can you do? Take about a few, we'll start at 5:20, about 14 minutes or so. I know that. I know.
Favor. Who announces later? For the next lecture?